Welcome to the Sales Readiness Podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Sales Readiness Group, an industry-leading sales training company that helps businesses develop highly effective sales organizations. For more information, visit us at salesreadinessgroup.com. This audio track features a webinar recording on prospecting to complex accounts with two of the principals at the Sales Readiness Group, Ray Makula and David Jacoby. In this audio track, we share proven networking and access strategies to increase the number and quality of relationships within key accounts. You will learn how to access and expand complex accounts, map the organization to get meetings wide and high, penetrate the account and develop customer coaches, create a plan to target each key decision maker, and more. Enjoy.
We'd like to start and really talk through this idea of more traditional prospecting. So what is it like from a standpoint of getting that first appointment? How do we fill up the pipeline? And David, maybe you could walk us through how we typically think about this in terms of the prospecting funnel and, you know, thinking about those initial targets that we might put out there for our sales team.
Right. So what I really want to do now is kind of draw a very clear distinction between what I would call a traditional way of looking at prospecting to, I'm going to use the term simple accounts, but I don't mean that in a pejorative sense, because I'm going to contrast that with complex accounts. So if we were prospecting into a simple account, and I'm going to define that as you have a, say, you know, 1 to 3 month sales cycle, maybe you got 1, 2, or maybe up to 3 decision makers that you have to interact with, what is that going to look like? So if we're going to do goal setting, first thing we're going to do is say, hey, how much closed business do we want? And in this case, we have a really simple example, closed business in a year, let's say $600,000 of closed business. And next we would say, okay, how many proposals? So what's our proposal win ratio? Maybe it's 2 proposals per every closed deal. So we need 60 proposals, and I'm assuming an average deal size of $20,000. Okay, how many legitimate opportunities do we need? Well, you know, if our opportunity to proposal ratio is, again, 2 to 1, again, very simple example, we need 120 opportunities, okay? Next, how many initial meetings? Well, if our ratio, again, is 2 to 1, again, this is a very simple example, we need 240 initial meetings that would generate 120 proposals, 120 opportunities, 60 proposals, 30 closed deals. Okay, so how much prospecting do we need to do? Well, and again, I'm using very simple examples here. If our prospecting call to appointment setting ratio is 5 to 1, and I mean, candidly, Ray, I'd love it if that was actually the case, it was that easy, then we have to make 1,200 calls in a year. So the purpose of this is really just to illustrate, you know, back in the good old days when you're selling to a really simple account without a lot of decision makers, it was pretty straightforward to create prospecting goals and really wrap your head around what prospecting looks like. And I think this is really in sharp contrast to prospecting into a complex account.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I think this is really, as you said, the traditional kind of the numbers game. And, you know, we certainly are big fans of more activity leads more results, but it's really where are we focusing that activity? And as we work through this process, you know, how can we improve our results? How can we really improve the win rates on those most desirable accounts, those that are really going to move the dial, those that are going to become our largest and our most strategic? That's really what we're looking for. We think this exercise is actually really enlightening and one that all sales teams should do just to understand their own ratios and how that pipeline plays out. But today we really want to focus on this idea of prospecting into more complex accounts, into larger accounts, and the idea of how do we identify and create new opportunities within those accounts that are most desirable. So those may be those strategic ones that we've named, we put them on a target account list, right? That's going to be separate from perhaps just general leads that we're processing day in and day out. But typically what we find and the way we're defining this, complex accounts have multiple decision makers. You know, numerous surveys out there, CEB I think has updated theirs this year and said it's now 6.7 average influencers and decision makers involved in a typical deal. So it's no longer just getting to, as you alluded to, that one decision maker and having them sign the deal, but we have a host of people, and in fact, we have oftentimes a committee that's making that decision. Also, it requires numerous contacts. It's not going to be, hey, we're identifying that just initially, but we need to be able to target multiple people. We need to triangulate. We need to learn more about that account. So that's kind of how we're thinking about prospecting a complex as opposed to the simple or a initial appointment to close, you know, kind of one call close scenario. What we'd like to do today is really get your input from the group here. And we have a great group turnout today. We really appreciate everybody attending and signing up. And what we'd like to do is get input from some of you and just have you answer this simple question in the chat window we have here. What are some of the biggest challenges you have with prospecting to complex accounts? Or if you're running a training team, what do you hear from your sales team? You know, what is it that's most challenging for them about complex accounts and prospecting into those complex accounts? We see people starting to chime in, but you know, David, I think this is really an interesting place to start because I think prospecting in complex accounts is more challenging for a number of the things that we've said. I'm going to go ahead and expand this window and let's you know, hear from some of the participants.
I mean, I love these answers. I mean, I think it's really finding the right decision makers, and then these organizations are really flat now. You know, the hierarchies of like 30 years ago are gone, and a lot of times you can't even figure out who has the power anymore.
Yeah, I think that's right. A common theme here, knowing the best person to call, you know, getting access, are they the right target, getting to the correct person, you know, getting the stakeholders to agree. So even if you get the appointment, how do you get them aligned? It could be overwhelming, right? We have too many people making decisions, and we got to get past that gatekeeper.
I think Eddie has a really good point there. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, Eddie's making a good point on the gatekeeper, and you know, there's always going to be a gatekeeper. A lot of times, it's really not even so much a gatekeeper; it's the first person who's willing to talk to you, and then a lot of times you're stuck at the bottom. Hard to get around that person once you establish kind of a pattern of behavior.
Right, right. Yeah, and with some references to, you know, we have challenging customers, that challenging customer mindset. You know, we have that influencer who can say no, but maybe they can't say yes, but we still need to identify. So, you know, I think we need to really think about why do we want to go after these accounts? And the answer is large, complex accounts can spend more money, right? And once we get engaged, there's opportunities to cross-sell and upsell. And so as opposed to spending just as much time for one deal, right, the benefit is once we're in that longer-term, larger, more strategic account, the payoff can be quite significant. So I think we're getting some really good input. Again, a lot of participants today. You know, Brandon actually brings up a really interesting point where sometimes they don't even internally understand how they purchase. In other words, they can't explain to you how to do business with them. And I think we'll talk about that as we go along about kind of taking control of that conversation. And we really need to be in that advisory role, that driver's seat, as we go. So, okay, let's go ahead and, continue on. Some really great points here. And I'm just going to turn up my volume here a little bit as we go along. But, you know, David, I think we run into a lot of those challenges. We heard these themes and then some, you know, from the audience. It's difficult to get access. We're stuck with lower level contacts oftentimes. You know, we sell too low. We've got a lot more competition in the account. There's a lot more noise and really competition for bandwidth, right, just to get that return call or to take that call. And it really requires us to have this longer-term strategy, and it may take more time, but as we said, it's going to be more important for us if we're able to engage. Any you would add to that, David, in terms of some of the challenges with prospecting?
Yeah, I mean, I think our audience did a really nice job kind of identifying some of the frustrations that they're clearly living. You know, I think take a step back, and the analogy I like to use when you're selling into a large account, think about a super tanker, right? A huge super tanker on the ocean, and your job is to get it to turn. a super tanker is not a jet ski, and it takes a long time to get it to turn. But once you get into the account, they don't want to switch vendors unless they have to. It's a hassle for them. So there's a huge payoff to getting into the account. And the mindset you have to have is very different than in the traditional simple account prospecting where it's just make 50 calls a day, because there's not 50 super tankers you can call every day. So you really do have to have a long-term strategy and mindset on how you're going to penetrate that account.
No, I think that's spot on. And let's talk about that. So we're going to give you kind of three simple techniques, three ways to think about targeting and prospecting these complex accounts. And we're going to break that down for you a little bit as we go along. So the first is we need to map the organization. We need to understand who we want to call on. Who is that appropriate person? How do we get to them? Okay, so I think that's the first, is who do we want to target? And we'll talk about some tools and techniques for doing that. And then we want to establish that access strategy. In other words, once we've identified the stakeholders that we want to target, what can we do to get access to them? And that's beyond just making a call and hoping, right? So I think we often use that. We'll lob in the email. We'll make a phone call. What can we do to actually build an access strategy, some creative approaches? And then the third piece is really, what are we going to say when we get there? So we better have an idea of what the impact of our solution, what value are we bringing? And let's determine that in advance. You know, I'll share one thought, which is, I think the days are gone where you could show up with a key stakeholder and they'd take your meeting and you would ask the question, hey, tell me what keeps you up at night?
Yeah.
And then you would scramble and try to respond to that question, right? I don't think we get the right to answer that, to ask that question anymore.
I agree. I mean, I think the expectation is a lot higher. And really, if you don't come in with some idea or insight, you know, if you don't bring that to the table, it's going to be extremely challenging to get access. And if you advance the slide, I kind of just want to touch a little bit on some ideas for account research, because ultimately, you know, there's been a lot of advancements in, you know, different technologies you can use to research who the players are. We'll get to that in a few minutes. Email technologies, things that make your life easier from a prospecting point of view, but ultimately, your success prospecting into a large complex account is going to be driven by, do you actually have a good idea, right? I mean, do you have an idea that's really going to connect with something that that account, the person you're talking to, that key person, something that's important to them, that's an initiative in the company? Because if you don't, it's just going to be noise. And you really have to spend a lot more time. Again, there's a very limited number of complex accounts that you can call. So, you know, I had a friend who worked at an investment bank, and he told me something, and I always remembered it. He goes, look, I got about 100 companies that I follow. That's it. So when I call up, and he was talking to the CFO and the CEO, it's almost like the Super Bowl for me, right? Like, after this list of 100, I don't have anyone else to call. So I have to come up with an idea that's really different and it's going to stand out. And the way that he would do it is by research. So you have to spend the time researching. You have to really understand what's going on in their world. Start with LinkedIn, read their 10K, read their press releases. Kind of what are the initiatives going on in their world? Who's in the organization, right? Who do you want to target? Who's above them? Who's below them? Who's to the left? Who's to the right? And how can they connect with you? And obviously LinkedIn is a very powerful tool.
Hey, you're on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah. All right. Sorry, I think we're trying to upgrade the audio here. Hopefully everybody can hear us. But, you know, I think it is really important to think about our account research. You know, where are we finding those opportunities, and what are we going to say when we get there? You know, let's talk a little bit more, David, about triggers, right? We have what we talk about, internal and external triggers. Those may be the things that give us access. and give us an opportunity. So, David, can you talk a little bit about the internal triggers that we may have in the account?
Right. So, you know, every company has a set of unique triggers, and these are going to be things where if you see these online right away, that ought to be a green flag that you should contact someone or start crafting a message. That could be a new initiative, that could be new goals or objectives. Organizational changes are really significant triggers. So, hey, they just got a new VP of marketing. They just got a new, you know, CTO. They just got a new VP of engineering, of IT, whatever. Those are really flashing green lights for you, you know, as an account executive to go out and start initiating contact and seeing what's going on. Understanding what the strategic plans are, did they change? These are things you can read about. If you have, you know, good communication going with someone at the company, you'll hopefully learn about it, you know, ahead of the curve. Personnel changes, not so much, you know, maybe not so much at the top, but they could be, you know, at any point in the organization that can change how they're evaluating initiatives, strategy, or vendors.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the more we can do the research factors that you talked about and, you know, look at things like the annual report, the 10K, you know, we're going into Hoover's, we're going into Wiki, you know, maybe even Glassdoor, right? They can tell us a lot about kind of things that are going on in the organization. And as we go through, we'll talk about the more we can identify those most strategic things that are impacting the organization, both internally and externally, the more we can start to build a roadmap or build a plan that talks about how our solution is going to help them in a meaningful way, as opposed to just pitching features, if you will, and hoping that something sticks. So I think it's really important to really do that research, to understand what those triggers, and once we identify, you should have your own list of things that typically trigger an opportunity for you to open that door and have that conversation. We should be looking for those. And anytime we get a news flash or we get an update or, you know, maybe we're looking at LinkedIn Navigator, you know, that is potentially telling us there's an opportunity to go there and have a conversation. So I think those can be really important, really meaningful for the background. And what that does is, you know, we want to understand, as we said, for the decision makers, who are we going after and what do we need to do? So in other words, how do we find out those, whether it's six or seven people that may be involved in this decision, who are those people? And also, what's their level of influence? So it's not to say that somebody at lower level of influence is somebody to disregard or not pay attention to. They may be a very strong supporter that can help get us access, they can help get us information, or they can actually distract or detract from our solution if we're not aligned. So we want to understand at all levels where they are and how we move up to that ultimate champion and ratifier, that person who's going to sign the deal or make the decision. And one of the things we'll talk about in a way to do that, because you say, well, how would I know that in a new organization? Well, think about your network. Think about developing coaches that can help provide information. And, you know, this isn't, hey, everybody I know I'm going to sell to, but somebody that you know probably knows something about that organization. And maybe they can help answer that question about what's really going on, what does this person care about, you know, what's going to be most important to that person. And I think ideally, and I've found, you know, if you sit down and say, hey, can you just help me map out who the players are here, if you have that relationship with somebody, they're often more than willing to do that, and it can be a wealth of information. So I think we really need to identify who the key players are, and I will put a plug in and say that I think LinkedIn is a fantastic tool for this, and Sales Navigator in terms of both identifying people by title, seeing who they're connected to. Oftentimes you get, hey, other people looked at these titles, so that gives you suggestions of who else you may call on. And a lot of times you can just map the organization just pretty much by titles and the connections once you start doing that research. Take the time, really map that out and understand, you know, kind of how the playing field lays out for you. And, you know, another key concept as we're doing that is to think about what they care about. And as we're looking at those, you know, mid-level kind of decision makers, they tend to focus on things that are more related to the user, right? More impacting them. What are the features? What are the implementation issues that are going to come up? You know, maybe detailed pricing because they're really focused on that budget. where as we get to the high-level decision makers, you have to think more strategically like a business owner. They're more concerned about how does this help us with strategy? How does this help deliver on the business drivers that we're trying to accomplish? What's the total value of the solution? And typically more about return on investment as opposed to, you know, kind of individual pricing. That's where we want to be. But we have to realize we need to be able to speak that language to the person that we're meeting with. And if we go in and start talking, you know, features and implementation issues with a C-level executive, they're probably going to get pretty bored with that conversation. And vice versa, if we go in and only talk about the overall value, but we don't answer the questions at the mid-level, we're probably not going to be responsive. So that's why that's key to really map the organization, understand the players, and as we talk about, you know, figure out what they're going to care about. So David, maybe
you know, Ray, I'll add to that. And when you talk about what's the number one issue that our audience raised today in the chat, it was getting, well, two sides of the same coin, right? It was getting access or being really stuck at the gatekeeper. And I think one of the problems that, you know, when in our workshops, when we talk to salespeople and we observe them is a lot of times they don't realize they're stuck at a gatekeeper until there are multiple meetings, until it's too late. And by not mapping the organization, they don't walk into that first meeting or that initial contact or phone call, whatever it is, with a plan. They don't say, in this meeting, my objective is to get access to this person, because they haven't taken the time to map the whole organization or do the best they can, maybe with limited information. So they're not deliberate about that first one or two contacts. And then that pattern of behavior kicks in where that gatekeeper, or that low-level person, they keep taking your calls and they keep meeting with you, but you're kind of stuck there. And once it happens a few times, it's very difficult to change that pattern.
Absolutely. And again, throughout these strategies, we're talking about really thinking about a longer-term plan and doing the research and the work that we need to connect those dots and really to get access to the right people and have the right thing to say. So let's continue on with that. And, you know, we'd like to get your input once again on a short chat exercise here. And I'd love to hear from you all, and we got some of these actually in the initial response. People were anxious to start to provide some suggestions, but what are some of your favorite methods for gaining access to that senior decision maker, you know, that elusive senior level person that we're trying to meet with who probably has gatekeepers in place and, you know, is going to get stuck there? You know, Mark brings up referrals, and I think that's a fantastic place to start. Anytime we have somebody saying, you know, John told me to call or suggested that I meet with you, you know, I think that's great. I think there's a lot of value in being creative about our calling. So Aaron brings up calling during lunch. I think sometimes calling before hours or after hours. Most executives are, you know, probably at their desk after hours, but they're out of their meetings. That may be a good time, but you have to be very sensitive to, you know, they may not welcome your call immediately, but at least you can get them. So, David, I don't know, do you see some others here that...
Yeah, I really like Mark's that kind of disappeared in the scrolling of the chat. Maybe you can make the box a little bit bigger, but he's really saying talk about market trends. And what I really like about that idea is that when you can demonstrate your expertise in some way, talking about, you know, maybe a problem that they're having, now it may not be that easy to figure that out, but maybe industry trends where you have unique insights where they want to talk to you. And that establishes your credibility, and that gives you the opportunity to learn what the problems are. So I really like that idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Brian brings up the idea of offering a resource. And I think in today's world, we really need to think about that as a consultant or advisor. What can we offer of value? And that idea that we need to show our value first, right? We need to sell it forward or prove it first. And so it's not a hard sell. We're saying, hey, I thought you might be interested, or we'd like to come in and provide, you know, some information about a white paper or an industry trend or something, as opposed to a pitch. And, you know, I think one of the worst things you can do is set that up and then go in and immediately go into your demo or your pitch. You're probably going to lose that opportunity and won't have a chance back in. So, you know,
yeah,
I think
I'll give a shout out to Eddie, who is basically making the point for what we call top gun selling, which is start at the CEO. In other words, don't be afraid to start with the highest level decision maker that you typically target, because all they need to do is say, this is something we're interested in, and then flip it over to maybe a lower level person. But now it has that senior person seal of approval, so that gets you in the door.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have a few more responses coming in, but I want to keep us moving here. Some really great thoughts as we're going through. You know, we'd like to just capture these. You know, some of these we touched on, and I think we even got some additional suggestions from the group. But we're going to talk a little bit more about coaches and how valuable a good customer coach can be to have in the organization. You know, somebody who can advise you. They may be inside, they may be actually outside, but somebody who really knows, can be that advocate for you. That can be extremely valuable. We talked about referrals, and anytime we can use a name or a reference, that's great. You know, we talk about accelerating contact, so just making sure that we're staying in front of them. That may be sending some marketing messages, sending some additional email, dropping off some information, you know, just being around and saying, oh yeah, you know, I keep hearing about you guys. So we're accelerating the contact at multiple levels, right? So all of a sudden you have, you know, five or six people saying, oh yeah, you know, they contacted me too. They have some interesting things to say. You know, David, we talk a lot in our selling skills course about value-added services, you know, those things you can do that are complementary that you're not going to charge for, but maybe you could give some examples of, you know, what are some of those things we might do to add some additional value that we're not going to charge up front for?
Yeah, I mean, these are things that would give you a significant competitive advantage. It may be, hey, we have, you know, complementary consulting services that we can offer to kind of analyze a problem for you. We're working with a company now that will send a couple of engineers on site to help you with a problem. And the idea there is that really by giving kind of this value up front, you kind of open up the door and you start a bigger conversation. You know, it could be consulting, it could be a market analysis, it could be some kind of competitive analysis, it could be, you know, out and out complementary services. So there's a lot of different things that you can do above and beyond just selling them a product that gets you inside and gets you, puts you in the position of providing value to those key decision makers.
Absolutely. And the more we can differentiate ourselves as somebody that they're interested in talking to, right, the more we're going to rise above that noise and the competitive landscape. You know, I think group presentations are great. Can we come in and do a lunch and learn or educational session, not promotional, but just offer to, you know, provide some information. We talk about networking. You know, what events are they going to? And sometimes we miss the opportunity in their LinkedIn to look at the groups that they're involved in and who they're following when we find those key stakeholders. Well, let's find those groups, and, you know, maybe we want to go, whether that's online and we have some visibility, we start participating, again, advocating or communicating, not selling, but maybe we can provide some additional information. Or if they're going to certain shows, you know, maybe that's a great one we want to target. We can do that networking. And David, you mentioned otherwise, you know, Top Gun selling, which we define as just using the top people in your organization to align with their organization. So this may be where you call in that C-level, that CEO, or maybe it's your chief strategy officer or your chief technology officer, and say, hey, he happens to be in town, she happens to be in town, we thought it might be great to get together, and you use that as an opportunity to broker that first meeting. So, you know, here we have 8 or 10 strategies, things that you can do, and I think we need to be creative. I think there are a lot of other opportunities where often we get stuck and say, well, you know, I've sent them my 6 emails and I've called them 8 times and they didn't respond, so, you know, I guess we have to move on, versus maybe we need to be a little bit more creative. Again, if we said these are our most valuable accounts and the ones we really want to be in, what can we do to really target them and get inside? So I said that I'd get back to customer coaches, and I just want to touch on this before we move to the next section, because I think coaches can be one of the most valuable things you do. And the way we define a customer coach, you know, what is a coach? Is somebody who wants to help you, wants you to win. And when we think back in our careers, probably to when we've had a coach, they're the ones that will call you in advance, right? They'll give you that information. Maybe they'll share some information that's really valuable. They'll also give you access. Oh, yeah, you know, I'll walk you down the hall. Let me make an introduction. those coaches can be extremely valuable in helping you navigate and sharing information, and they can be, you know, a great help. What we need to think, and really the last question here, is how can we help that coach? How can we develop them first? Can we help them further their career? Can we provide them information that makes them look good, right? Can we help it be a win for them by positioning it in a certain way? I think, again, by paying it forward, being that go-giver, right, that seeks to help them first, we can establish those relationships first without expecting anything immediately in return, but that builds our network, it adds value into the equation, and then they're the ones that typically we can come back to when we need help down the line. So I think building out your coach network, and I'll add one more piece to this, which is it's not just one, but multiple. And the research suggests that when we can have multiple coaches within an account, our chances of winning a deal go up significantly. So how can we triangulate and build multiple touch points that can help us within the organization? So the final piece, David, and I want to leave some time for questions here at the end as well, but you know, this idea of determining impact, so if we said, who do we want to call on, how are we going to get access, and now what are we going to say, what's the impact, what is that message once we get there, maybe you could talk through our framework for, you know, some of the categories and some of the areas that we look to when we want to actually develop those messages and think about what we're going to say once we're in that account.
Right. So, I mean, ultimately, your success at prospecting in a complex account is really going to be conditioned on coming up with a good idea. And a good idea is going to be something that moves the ball forward, right, for the person you're talking to. And generally in a business, it's going to be, how can you help with image? How can you save money, improve productivity, give them some competitive advantage, improve customer satisfaction, or reduce the total cost of ownership? And those are some of the categories, really generic categories, that we like to use when we're analyzing a problem. And what you have in a complex account is that oftentimes your product or solution may impact, I guess pun intended, different departments. So you have kind of that dimension going on. And another dimension is that different people, and they could be in the same department or they could be, you know, higher in the food chain, focus on different impact categories. So a low-level person may be a technical buyer and focuses just on, you know, the technical aspects, but the C-level person may be focusing on advantage and money, right? And those are kind of the issues that they're focusing on. So really your job is not only to get access, but really try to align how your solution kind of affects the different people you're getting access to, understanding that it's going to vary by department and then by kind of where they are in terms of seniority and by role.
Absolutely. Again, if our goal is to go in and be an advisor and a problem solver, thinking about the categories of business needs or challenges that they have is going to be, you know, extremely valuable for us. And as you mentioned, you know, they're going to care about different things. So, you know, I'll give an example. We worked with a medical device manufacturer. And their product was so good that when they implemented it in a new clinic or hospital, it attracted doctors who wanted to work with that technology. So, you know, what a great message in terms of improving their image, right? If you want to attract doctors, that's ultimately going to bring in new customers, you know, we can help you do that. And that was a great competitive advantage, which would speak to, right, the highest C-level, probably CEO, as well as the marketing folks, the sales folks, how are we going to position that? Where on the other side, you know, the fact that that device also reduced the number of callbacks, that's really important for, you know, your customer service team and your technical team, that all of a sudden we're reducing the amount of customer satisfaction complaints that we have, and there's a direct cost associated with that. So again, if we start thinking about those categories, it really gives us a good talk track as we go in. We can start doing more of our research, find out where those problems are, and now we're speaking to benefits of our solution and the value of our solution, as opposed to talking in generic features. Hey, we can do all these great things. Which one do you want? Which, you know, we've lost the opportunity to have those generic conversations. So I'll just cover again a couple of these areas. As we mentioned, you know, the marketing director probably cares a lot more about image and competitive advantage. You know, that would be something that would be really important to stress and understanding their challenges. Where a financial buyer, much more about money and productivity. How is this going to, you know, reduce our costs? Or the technical buyer, you know, is this going to improve our customer satisfaction or the way we use the product? Is it going to make our people more productive? Or maybe, you know, reduce our total cost of ownership because of the long-term value that it brings to the organization. So I think you can see, you know, we're talking to different people about different categories because, again, we need to align with all of those people that are going to influence that deal. The idea is thinking about these categories in advance and understanding where the value comes from. So let me just touch briefly on this idea of what's, you know, obvious and then maybe what's under the surface area. And we divide this and kind of talk about, you know, tangible versus intangible. You know, tangible are those you can quantify. They're fairly obvious. And you know that if you implement this product, it's going to have this direct impact on the organization. And those are great because we want to quantify those. We want to get credit. But there are also intangibles that are, you know, that below the surface, right? They're a little harder to ascertain, but sometimes they're just as important when we get into those conversations. And these may be things like how the brand influences the customers, right? These are the softer benefits that we provide. It may be that they can trust you as a vendor, and that gives them peace of mind, and they know that your solutions are actually going to be implemented. You know, what are those things intangible that are going to be important to our buyer? Let's consider those in addition to the tangible values as we're going in and doing that research. I don't know, David, do you have any other comments on that?
Yeah, I mean, I really think what this speaks to is kind of the amount of preparation you really have to do when you're crafting your ideas on what you're going to say initially, and really getting outside of your comfort zone and spending time preparing not just the obvious things that you would say as a canned prospecting message if you were in a simple world, but some of the less obvious things and intangible values. These are things that can really give you a competitive edge because you're thinking about them and your competitors probably are not.
Absolutely. So, you know, again, this is all part of, before we've had those conversations, thinking through what that value can be and what we can be doing to prepare those conversations, because we may only get one meeting with that key decision maker. We better be prepared and understand what's most important when we get there. So one of the things we do is we really break this out into this, what we call a customer impact map or this strategy map, and it identifies basically all the things we've been talking through and allows us to put it on one page. This may end up in your CRM, it may be on a spreadsheet. I don't care if you do it on the back of an envelope, but you know, do we know the people that we're calling on and what they care about? David, do you want to kind of take us through these categories and kind of how it pulls it all together?
Yeah, I mean, I think that when you think about any kind of mapping exercise like this, it's really about who are the key players, right? What's their level of influence? What's important to them? And how will you get access? And I would like to challenge people in our audience today that if you're having trouble at a gatekeeper level or you're just initiating prospecting, create a map like this, and you don't need our tool. You can just do it on a yellow pad or, you know, put together a spreadsheet or do it in Salesforce, whatever. But I'm willing to bet you that the accounts where you're having the most trouble are probably ones where you're not able to populate the tool, where you don't know enough like who are the players and what's important to them. And once you can see what the gaps are, it'll really kind of inform what your actions need to be.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, it's really a critical point that if we're looking at this map and if we, you know, believe that 5 to 7 people are going to be involved in a purchase decision in a complex account, and we only have one name on that map, then we realize we have some pretty significant gaps. And I think, you know, it's an age-old problem. We get stuck selling too low, and we get stuck selling to only one person. So let's really force ourselves, let's take that opportunity to identify, well, who are the other people that likely would be involved? Let's ask our coaches, our advocates, do our research, maybe it's LinkedIn, whatever we need to do to find out, and then say, well, you know, maybe you could get us an introduction to Rick, or what does Linda care about, or, you know, can you help me understand some of Bob's priorities? So unless we know that, we should realize that we're probably in a losing position because the competition probably does, and especially if there's an incumbent, they already know all those people and they have relationships, so it makes us that much more difficult. Not saying it's insurmountable, but let's just be a little bit more intentional, a little bit more strategic about how we think about that. So again, just a tool to kind of bring it all together. Let me just kind of summarize and cover a couple of these key takeaways, and then I'd like to move into questions. You know, we talked about first mapping the organization, figuring out who's who and where they live and some of the ways to do that, and then using some of those creative access strategies to penetrate the account. You know, what can we do to actually get to those people, and not assuming that they're going to return our phone call, that's not their job, but what can we do to actually get in front of them in a creative way by sending them that information, by adding value, you know, by leveraging our referrals and our coaches. And then ultimately determining that impact and considering those impact categories and creating a plan to target each key decision maker so that we do get in front of them, so that we do have access. And I think that's going to be critical in really understanding how we approach a complex account. You know, if we have an unlimited number of accounts and we want to call all day, that's great. We may get traction. But on the other extreme, you know, we may be selling into a very niche market. Maybe there are only 20 key accounts worldwide that are a potential buyer of our services. Well, then in that case, we probably need to spend as much time planning for each of those accounts as it's going to take us, you know, to close. Those are the opportunities, and we're not going to get another chance. So I think we need to be strategic about how we think about that. So with that, David, I'd like to go ahead and actually turn it back over to Jackie and see if we have some questions and thoughts, and then we'll wrap things up here in a few minutes.
Thank you, Ray and David. We've received quite a few questions, and I'll go ahead and start with our first question. James asks, how many no's are you willing to get from different people within an account before you give up on that account?
So, Ray, maybe
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, Ray. All right, well, I'll take a stab. Maybe you can have a different perspective. But, you know, my thought on this is that without knowing anything about James's particular situation, I think I want to ask a few questions, right? Who are you hearing no from? So have you mapped the account? Are you hearing no from someone really low? That means they have the ability to say no, but they don't have the power to say yes. Why are they saying no? In other words, did you come up with a good idea? Maybe your insight isn't unique enough where it's something that's of interest to them. Maybe it's a no now that will easily be converted to a yes later. So there's a lot of complicated factors. Maybe the person you're talking to hasn't acknowledged that they even have a problem. So I think it's very difficult to say once you hear no eight times, stop prospecting. I think in big accounts, really you should take the, if they're big enough, you should kind of have a mindset that I'm always going to be in contact with the big accounts, whether it takes, have that long-term mindset, whether it takes 3 months or 6 months or 9 months. And if you hear no, 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 and you have, hey, I mapped the account, I'm hearing no from a really senior person, it's a really concrete reason, then it's just something you have to revisit next quarter or next year. So really what's driving the no is to me really kind of the key piece of analysis here.
Absolutely, and I completely agree, and also would add that I think we need to think about a no as we haven't probably provided enough value and we haven't connected that to a need that they have. So that probably tells me we need to go back and see if we can find out a little bit more about what's going on or why we have a unique solution to a problem that they're having to move forward. So let's go ahead and move on to the next question, Jackie.
Thank you. So Michael asks, how would you suggest getting past the gatekeeper to talk to the decision maker?
So, you know, as we talked about, I think gatekeepers can take a number of forms. You know, that could be an administrative assistant, but it could also be procurement. It could be, you know, somebody in the organization that just doesn't want to allow you access. And again, I would go back to the idea of we need to provide something that's so compelling that that gatekeeper is going to say, oh, you know, as a matter of fact, I think the decision maker probably would be interested, or that they're going to actually feel bad if the decision maker finds out that you had a solution to their problem, but you never had a chance to deliver that. So, you know, I think there's a real strategic decision to be made about whether you continue to work with that gatekeeper or you weigh the options and say, you know what, I'm going to go around that gatekeeper and I'm going to go directly to that decision maker. And so I think it's important for us to, you know, depending on the relationship and how long we've been working, to really assess that situation and decide whether we're going to make an end around and can we provide something that's going to be, you know, even more meaningful and go directly to that decision maker.
Right. And, you know, Ray, let me just add this. Before going to the end around discussion, which to me you have to really think long and hard about, I would take it back a couple steps and say, okay, maybe it's too late here. But in your very next, think about your very next appointment. Say it's your first appointment. Think about how are you selling, right? And how are you setting the expectations for how you want to interact with people? So if you go to a low-level person and you don't clearly set the expectation that you need to talk to a senior person in order to understand the problem or even put together a proposal, then you're never going to get to that person and you'll be stuck at the gatekeeper. So if your solution is complex, it's not unreasonable to say, look at, you know, the way that we like to work with our clients is we really need to, you know, do X, Y, and Z, and in order to even understand if there's a fit, I need to talk to these people. So you have to kind of set the expectation of what you need in order to keep the conversation going. Now, that's going to involve taking a risk and really kind of drawing a line in the sand. But my guess is that if you don't do that, the person you're talking to doesn't have the ability to say yes. And then you're going to be stuck in that worst, that really bad situation where you're doing all the work, they're just kind of listening, and maybe they'll take your proposal forward, and that's a really bad space to be in. I would rather kind of set that expectation up front and hear that no right away than kind of be stuck in the gatekeeper world, you know, for months, because that's a real time suck, and those deals rarely close.
Yeah. No, I think that's great, and I think we don't want to offend the account. I think if we hear no too often and we keep pushing, you know, there's something professional persistence, but there's also the point of just being annoying. And if we're calling in and keep pitching the same thing and aren't adding any value, I think we will be getting, you know, frustrating that account. And, you know, I think Mark brought up an interesting point earlier, said that the gatekeeper is somebody we really do need to pay attention to. And I think we want to really be making sure that we're not alienating people, you know, that's, and we cover that in our fundamental course, but in terms of building that relationship, understanding what a win is for them, and, you know, the last thing you want to do is alienate a receptionist or administrative assistant or a manager who, you know, can put you on that blacklist and ensure you, your calls never go through. So I think we do want to be sensitive to that.
Great, thank you. Last question. Mike asks, I'm in M&A business development. Success is all about timing and business cycles and relationships. With privately held businesses, are there ways of identifying when the business owners want to sell?
So it's a really good question, and there's certainly no database that you can access where people kind of raise their hand in advance. I do think that your type of business where there's a limited number of people is all about networking, and it's really networking and listening. And what that means is how many events, where do these business owners congregate? You know, do they go to Vistage? Do they, you know, where are they going that you can insert yourself, not in a sales from a sales perspective, but from a consultant perspective. So I'll use Vistage as an example. If your market is M&A and privately held small and mid-sized businesses, can you get yourself to be a regular Vistage speaker that talks about business valuation, transition strategies, exit strategies, so that you're talking to those people, and how can you do that on a regular basis? Because you're not going to find that information from LinkedIn, right? Someone isn't going to say on LinkedIn, I mean, they could, and you should be looking, but you really need to kind of put yourself by doing a tremendous amount of networking in a position to hear those things.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's applicable to other industries and other businesses as well, which is thinking about, as we mentioned earlier, where can we find those triggers that we're looking for? And a trigger is certainly, yes, somebody decides that they want to sell. So is that through those industry networking events? Is it through discussions in online forums? You know, is it through our network where people will just tell you, hey, by the way, I heard so-and-so is doing this? So I think that applies if they're acquiring new technology, if they're implementing a new system, you know, if they're doing a reorganization. We want to put ourselves in a place where we're going to be aware of those triggers, and that's going to help us map the accounts.
Thank you for listening. If you found this episode valuable, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and share this track with your network. If you're looking to improve selling skills, you may also be interested in getting a complimentary copy of our white paper on maximizing the effectiveness of sales training to learn how to achieve sustainable success from sales training. You can download your free copy at bit.ly/SRP training. Again, that's bit.ly/SRP training. Thanks again for listening, and remember, better skills produce better results.